Crib Notes, things parents Google at 3 a.m.
Welcome aboard. This is Crib Notes, looking at things that parents Google at 3 a.m. Every episode, we're going to be looking at things that crop up with your babies and children's health with paediatrician new mum, Dr. Sarah Blackstock, and me, dad-to-be, Rick Kelsey. We're going to be answering the most common questions and what you want to know about your kids. If you like us, don't forget to tell your friends. What's discussed today is the opinions of the individuals and not the organisations they work for.
And while we hope you find this podcast helpful, remember, this is not personal medical advice. If you are concerned, do speak to a professional.
This podcast is all about screen time. Now, screen time really brings up so many images, doesn't it? Things like toxic, detox, you can't get away from it.
Is my child's brain going to be turning to mush? All of this. I think that's a thing. Parents start out saying, I only want my child to play with Scandi wooden toys. They're never going to go near an iPad. But this technology is all around us, isn't it?
It is. And of course, the question people actually ask is this going to do my child any harm?
Yeah. And that's why today we're going to be talking to Dr. Max Davey. He is Head of Health Promotion at the Royal College of Paediatrics. Now, this is the organisation which looks after child health in the UK. And they have actually recently released a report which gives some guidance to parents. But this actually doesn't have any timeframes in it, which hopefully will give parents a bit of relief. This is interestingly because earlier this year, the World Health Organization, which are another governing body internationally, which look after global health, had given quite strict timings. So for children under five, only less than 1 hour, and children younger than that, none at all. So this was slightly conflicting evidence.
Right,
so it'd be
two
quite
different
key
ones
for us to find out why.
Max, great to have you along.
Hello.
Screen time is something that's so important though, isn't it? And it really kind of, it worries new parents, and there is a lot of confusing information out there about it.
There absolutely is, and there's a lot of competing voices. Does placing a limit on children's screen time, do we have evidence to do that? And there's several ways that we could think about that. One is there like a takeoff? Is there a safe threshold after which suddenly, you know, any kind of harms take off? There isn't. Mm. There is no kind of there's no threshold effect in the data. And the second is, do we have any evidence that placing limits on screen time actually either has an effect on how much screen time is experienced by children, or actually does it have an effect on outcomes? And the answer to those is no, it really doesn't.
Because I suppose, like, in a real kind of simple way of describing it, you know, when you see a one-year-old on an iPad for an hour at night just before they go to bed, and people are looking on and thinking, right, that's great for me, but is it bad?
That's why we took the approach we took, which was really to ask parents a number of questions. One is, are you in control of your children's screen time? Because if you're not in control, then you've got a problem to start with. Then you've got the question, is your children's screen time interfering with things that you need to do? You know, if you have a child who's screaming because you need to go out, but they won't come off the iPad, then you have a problem. Hmm. But actually, what you have is a parenting problem, not a screen problem. And then there's the question about sleep. Now, we do advise that screen time is ended an hour before the planned bedtime of the child. And that can be quite a difficult thing to put in place, but we think it's important because the more we know about sleep and sleep duration, and I know that they're going to have Mike Farquhar to come talk further about this, but spoiler, it's really important. And the fourth question, in case you're wondering, is have you got control of snacks when the child is in front of a screen?
Ah, it's more complicated than that, isn't it?
How do you mean?
As in, what type of snacks?
But I think what you need to do is just not have that mindful gobbling.
Yeah.
Mindless gobbling.
Yeah.
In front of like a movie or whatever. There is a cultural thing, and a lot of this is about changing the culture. When you're thinking about controlling obesity, it's about altering the culture around food. And one of the cultural things we have is that we stock up on a load of snacks and then we sit and watch a movie. And actually, that's not something we have to throw out, but we need to think, actually, would I have that if I wasn't watching a movie?
Yeah.
If I'm having some snacks with my movie, am I not going to have pudding with my tea? That's the sort of calculation you have to make.
Max, screen time has become so judgmental, though, hasn't it? I mean, me and Sarah were talking about this the other day. The fact that, you know, people are judgmental about what pregnant mums do and where they go, what they eat, whether or not they should have a drink.
Sure.
But people are also very judgmental about other people's kids and how much time they spend in front of screens?
Part of this is sort of competitive parenting, because there's been a rash of articles by people in Silicon Valley about how I don't use screens for my children. And that's not about actually having had a look at the evidence and deciding it's best for your child. That's competitive parenting. That's showing off. Mm. That I'm able to do this without iPads or without, you know, using the TV. I don't see why you'd have to do that. And I think for some people who have a lot of money and a lot of resources, it probably is easier to live without screens. So once again, it's people who are better off judging people who are less well off. Now, I mean, I think obviously if your child's use of screens and actually your own use of screens as a parent is interfering with your ability to interact with the child, then you have a problem.
That's the key.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'm of the understanding that the quality of screen time is possibly more important than the quantity as well. Is that something that you believe?
People say that, and it's sort of, it's a kind of comforting, nice thing to hear, isn't it? But I don't know how we measure quality. I think we need to be a bit careful that we don't, import our moral judgments into what is good quality screen time and what is not good quality screen time.
Love Island versus Peppa Pig.
I think that's a good example.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Love Island is unequivocally not suitable for young children. but yeah, I think there's an element of that. I think, you know, let's say Love Island versus a dramatisation of Midsummer Night's Dream. Okay, they've both got love, lust, identity. They've both got all of these themes in them. And why do we, you know, we judge one versus another? That's probably a slightly stretched analogy. But I think, you know, if you go back to children, you've got Peppa Pig, which is generally, you know, approved of, and you've got, I don't know, Pokemon, that would be seen as kind of trashy. But is it? I mean, it, you know, it, does it really make a difference? And a lot of this is, I am afraid, a sort of middle class prejudice.
Judgmental.
Being imported into a lot of these.
What do you actually recommend for parents then? You said it's all about being pragmatic. Mm. But, you know, for example, if a parent was going on a long car journey, do you think it's safe for them to be appeasing their child with a video?
I think it is. I mean, the main risk you're running is probably car sickness, isn't it?
Mm.
I think it's fine. I would say, I suppose, a long car journey is an opportunity for interaction.
Mm.
It's an opportunity for play, potentially. And you are passing up that opportunity by giving them a video for the whole time.
iPad babysitter.
Yeah. So, you know, you're not doing an awful lot else. It's boring. But maybe you could all just share your boredom and do something together. I mean, and I suppose I'm biased as well because I always drive. If everyone else is watching a video and you're the driver, it's very boring for the driver.
Why should children not watch TV before bed?
So the evidence seems to be that it will interfere with sleep initiation. So it'll make it harder for them to get to sleep. It seems to be partly due to the particular sort of light that's emitted by backlit screens. So that's pretty much any screen apart from one of the kind of Kindles that don't have backlighting. But it's, even if you correct for that, and the very clever people at Apple and other smartphones are available, have changed their wavelengths to so it's more orangey, but that still doesn't really answer the problem because it still seems to have an effect. And it's all, I think it's because it's very stimulating, and television and video games and YouTube are all paced at a very high cognitive pace. That's culturally how things are. So it is very stimulating, and it's hard for children to come down from that to going to sleep.
But Max, it's also probably the time when a lot of mums and dads actually give people give kids the iPad, because that's when they want to make them fall asleep.
Okay, so if you fall asleep watching an iPad, that's a very good way of giving yourself problems with night waking, because the iPad's not going to... So we all wake during the night naturally. And if the environment is the same as when we went to sleep to start with, we will go back to sleep without ever being aware of having woken up. But if the environment has changed, and of course, if you went to sleep with your parent and then you wake up and your parent's not there, that's one way that you will kind of subconsciously just activate your threat apparatus,
right?
And there you'll be wide awake. So it's not a good idea for children to go to sleep with these with these devices on. So actually, I think the argument that people make is really what they're saying is, it's a busy time of day. I want to shunt the child onto screens for a while I sort the others out, and then I'll come back to them. Now, that's okay. That might be okay. But you are going to do that at the expense of them getting, you know, to bed at the time that you want.
Right. So it's better to have them actually be on iPads during the day than it is just before bed.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
That's
probably
really interesting, isn't it? Because there's probably a lot of people listening to that going, right, okay, let's reverse that around.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, I think I've spoken to quite a lot of kids, you know, quite behaviourally challenged, and it's that time before bed is the only time that you can actually get to talk to them, because they're winding down. So I think, if you have got a relationship which isn't great with your child, and people find it very shameful to talk about that, but if that's the case, then actually maybe that screen-free time, which you as a parent also need to abide by,
yeah,
that's really important. There's no point you saying no screens for an hour before bed if you're there scrolling through Facebook in the kitchen.
Doing the same thing.
It's an opportunity for you to spend some time with your child before bed.
TV shows which are branded as educational, do you think that they are?
Broadly, no. It depends what you mean by educational. So I've mentioned Horrible Histories earlier, which I'm a massive fan of. And yes, children will learn facts from Horrible Histories. My children have a much stronger grasp of the Stuart dynasty than I ever will, because Matt Bainton's brilliant at being Charles II. Okay, fine. But in terms of learning skills, and that's often where the programmes sell themselves, in language skills or other skills, television is useless for learning skills. There's very good data on that actually watching a programme is not going to teach you the skills to interact. So that I think where there is a worry about displacement of other activities, it is around interaction. And TV, whatever you're watching, is not a substitute for interaction with another person in the flesh. It never will be.
That makes sense. And do you think that screen time in general is addictive?
It depends what you mean by addictive. People use that term very loosely. In medical terms, no. I mean, there's no question that none of the criteria for addiction, as formally understood physiologically, none of those are fulfilled. There is, of course, gaming disorder. Gaming disorder, which has now been slightly unfortunately approved by the WHO, our old friends. The worry about that is that, yes, clearly there are people who find gaming so compelling and the rest of their life so difficult that they escape into games. Is that a problem with the game, or is that a problem with the rest of the person's life? I would say it's the rest of the person's life that is problematic here. And by pathologizing the game, you're shifting the problem to the wrong part of the difficulty here. They should be working with what is the person avoiding here, rather than what is the nature of the relationships within the family, the dynamics within the family, that A, they don't want to be with the rest of their family, and also the fact that the rest of their family doesn't have enough kind of pull on the young person that they can actually get them off the game.
Yeah.
So I think it's an unhelpful way of talking about games.
And what about people's concerns about video games causing violence?
I think we can be absolutely clear that they do not. So there has been some data showing that in the immediate aftermath of playing an aggressive video game, young children, I think particularly boys, become briefly more aggressive. But there is no link between the use of video games and serious violence. And that's a really important moment to say that, when it's being said by US politicians and being whispered
all the time.
At the moment, yes, that video games is part of the problem. Video games is not part of the problem. Video games are played by 98% of adolescents. 98% of adolescents do not commit acts of violence. And most video games, which is not something that I celebrate, but most video games have some form of conflict or aggression within them.
Yeah. Do you know, just sticking on the subject of iPads and what they do and don't bring, I hear that children that have exposure to iPads have better coordination skills. Is there any truth in that?
I think there's been a couple of, again, small, tiny, weeny studies. Really, all children now have access to some kind of touchscreen technology. So how are you going to tell? I mean, I work in Lambeth, which is very some relatively deprived area, everyone's got a smartphone that is capable of running a app. So all children, and you know, you get into nurseries, they've got smart, you know, touchscreen technology. All children are going to now have access to it. So it's like, you know, well, is the fact that you have a remote control in your house going to make it easier for you to use remote control? Well, clearly it is. So I think, yes, the technological environment changes what children are good and bad at. And this is another example. They probably, you know, probably will have a subtle effect on their spatial skills, which is good. But I don't think it means that you should be kind of using it as a kind of boot camp to develop these skills. It's just in the water. It's just out there.
One thing I was meaning to touch on was you were talking about mental health earlier, and you said that actually there's not been much of a link anymore. I was of the understanding that there was a link between screen time, social media and depression.
No, basically not. So there's a really lovely study by Andy Shabilsky and Amy Auburn in Oxford. It came out about 4 months ago.
Okay.
And what they did a vast study, and they did lots of analysis of the links. So it wasn't a causal study, it was an association study looking at the associations between low well-being and the amount of specifically social media that adolescents consume. Because, okay, we're talking about screen time, but social media is the one, if you look at the media, that is the most demonized form of screen time. So they really looked at the worst case scenario in a sense. And they found that there was a very, very, very tiny relationship. And the way they put it in the kind of some of the commentary around it is it's less important than whether or not you wear glasses, and it's as important as how much potato you eat. So it's really that tiny,
right,
the effect that they found. So I think in isolation, it's almost, I mean, I know I've come on to talk about screen time, but screens are so much part of
us. Everything.
You might as well just talk about, I don't know, you might as well talk about going outside as a kind of, you know, how much outside time you should have. That also is not very meaningful. So I think it's very difficult to talk to actually measure screen time. It's very difficult to police screen time. And I think we should stop trying.
Yeah. So screen time, it's okay. It's not bad, but restrict it. Think about what's on it. Use the best time of day, not before bed, and stop worrying.
Yeah. Basically.
Max, that's super.
Thank you very much.
Crib Notes, things parents Google at 3 a.m.
Don't forget, what's discussed today is the opinions of the individuals and not the organisations they work for.
And while we hope you find this podcast helpful, remember, this is not personal medical advice. If you are concerned, do speak to a professional.